Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
On Friday, October 19th, the Norris Group proudly presents its fifth annual award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joins Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Foreclosure Radar and Sean O'Toole, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronskiest, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Berry, Fry Wiles, MVT Productions, and White House Catering. Learn more about the panel and how to attend at isurvivedrealestate.com.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Sean O'Toole. Sean is the founder and CEO of ForeclosureRadar.com, the only company that tracks every foreclosure in California with daily updates on all foreclosure auctions. Prior to Foreclosure Radar, Sean spent 15 years building and launching software companies before entering the foreclosure business in 2002, where he has successfully bought and sold more than 150 properties. Sean, we are excited to have you back on our panel, and welcome to our show.
Thanks, Bruce. Always great talking with you.
Yeah, it's I always enjoy it, too. You know, what's kind of fun is we kind of fairly often disagree. But I think we both respect each other's process and how we get to a decision, that we almost always can end up, if we listen to each other's side of how we got to a different answer, it seems like we end up with an improved answer for whatever question we're contemplating. And that's kind of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to start way back when you were 10 years old. You got kind of a birthday gift that turned out to be real significant. What was it, and why did you take it so seriously?
Yeah, why I took it so seriously is a good question. But it was the original Apple II computer, and
You figure most kids would just say, "Hey, that's great," and kind of mess around with it. But you didn't mess around with it.
No, I was absolutely fascinated by it, and by the fact that you could, you know, write a program and get this machine to do something. And, you know, that my parents purchasing that computer at that age gave me opportunities for the rest of my life. It's pretty amazing.
Did they actually, think about the significance of a 10-year-old getting a gift? I know that now that you have a son, you have, but I don't know if that went through their mind.
I think they had some clue. My dad was a professor and had some involvement in the computer science lab at the university, and so I think he had some inkling that computers were going to be important, but I don't know if they gave it that much thought.
How did the budding computer genius and you end up getting in the foreclosure business? How did those two get together?
Mostly by accident. After the dot-com bubble in 2000, I took a break from starting software companies, which I'd been doing the prior 15 years, and moved out to my vacation house. And my water ski buddy had a good friend who was buying foreclosures, and he said, you know, hey, why don't you give this guy a hand? He could use some software to run his business, and, you know, you could keep, playing with me and going water skiing instead of going back to Silicon Valley.
Okay.
So he had some self-interest there. And, I didn't really have much interest in it. And he introduced me to his friend. And, I wasn't sure that it was the right way to go. But he let me look at his last 20 deals. And the returns were amazing. And I said, yeah, I'm in.
Okay. At the time, accessing information was a very different world than what we are now accustomed to. So when you had to do research...
Yeah, I remember guys at the courthouse steps with shoeboxes organized by date, and in the shoebox they kept Polaroids of each property, and with their notes on the property on the back of the Polaroid. And when a property got postponed to a new date, they moved it back in the shoebox to that date.
And those were the best of the best because they were there at the sale.
Yeah, that was a guy who's organized, actually had photos of each property and notes and all the rest. Yeah, the shoebox Polaroid system was one of the better ones.
And if you wanted to get an update on a time of a sale or a change in date, it wasn't automated in the least, was it?
Wasn't automated in the least. You had to get on the phone, call, try to figure out the system. Back when we first started, there was none of these things on the web for the most part either. And, we built all of our tracking systems kind of pre-websites for most of the big trustees and posting and publishing companies. And it's gotten better now, but, there's over 150 trustees that work in California, so it's still it's easy to find, about half the data, and then it gets considerably harder from there.
When you were buying a trustee sale and you had these tools that you invented, that was a big advantage. What gave you the idea to say, I think I'll share this?
Well, change in the marketplace is always creates the need for invention of new things. Basically, at the end of 2005, I decided that I wanted out of the foreclosure business. I felt like there was going to be a crash. Partner actually disagreed with me, wanted to keep going. We ended up parting ways. And it turned out to be pretty fortuitous timing because I got most of the rest of my inventory sold in late 2005, early 2006.
Looking back,
market before things crashed.
Yeah, that was a perfect exit time.
Yeah.
Now,
and at that point, I was already tracking foreclosures throughout the state of California, and I had all this data, and I was kind of addicted to it. I didn't want to get rid of it, didn't want to stop tracking it, but didn't want to invest at that point either because I felt like the market was overvalued. So, came up with the idea for Foreclosure Radar. And at the time, I didn't think it was a very good idea because realtors had no interest in foreclosures at the time, and there was only about 40 guys in the state that were actively buying at the auction, not much of a market.
Well,
I had a little faith that was going to change.
What was interesting, when you were tracking foreclosures, let's say in 2004 and 2005, you weren't tracking very many numbers.
No. I mean, statewide, we probably had fewer than we have in an average county.
Right. So at the peak in 2008, that changed by several thousand percent. And how difficult was that transformation going from a small number you're counting to a huge number?
Well, it was good that we figured out a revenue model pretty quickly because, costs escalated awfully fast. It went from one person tracking the whole state to quite a few.
Is it something that you get charged by the piece or is it just a... somehow a contract?
No. We have a flat fee, fixed rate service. So, and we still have the same pricing today that we launched with in 2007.
Would you charge other people?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We charge $49.95 a month for everything. And yet, the numbers that we were tracking started escalating dramatically.
You know, what's funny about that is that the people that are from... I don't know, familiar with websites and stuff, and they're used to free everything. I've actually heard comments about $49, like if that's a lot. And then when you look at the information and you come from an experience level of myself prior to that, any of that information being available, period, and then not all in one spot, you think, you've got to be kidding me. The list itself used to cost several thousand dollars a year without any of the goodies, right?
Yeah.
So, in a way, you've really have transformed access to information, and in some ways, it's interesting. You might have different reactions. You're the 40 thieves, if you will, the people that experience buyer. What's their reaction to you making it very easy for them, but also everybody else to have access to this?
I've had a lot of those conversations, and it's usually kind of twofold. On the one hand, it's like, wow, you made my life so much easier, because I no longer need to do all these things that I used to do. But then on the other hand, they feel like I brought a lot of competition to the market, which has changed margins and other things. So it's usually a, you know, wow, thank you for making my life easier, and boy, do I hate you for
can you stop
bringing all these competitors into the market.
Yeah, can you stop telling anybody else now that I have it? You know, you've gone from a small amount of foreclosures to a huge amount in 08. Now it's been declining. A few years from now, I would expect the decline to be still pretty serious. And so how does your customer base change when you go from a glut of foreclosures to maybe back to levels that are really kind of normal?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting thing because as the market gets stronger and there's fewer foreclosures, there's almost more demand for those few foreclosures.
Absolutely, because they all have profit centers.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that it's kind of a mixed bag. There was a period of time there, especially in 2007, where you were out talking to realtors and they're like, why would in the world would I need information on foreclosures? Yeah. And, you know, by 2008 and certainly by 2009, they got why that was important. As there's other opportunities in the market, you know, foreclosures are a little harder for a realtor, so I'd expect we'd probably see our realtor business decline, but you know, we'll probably see more interest from investors as they see the market improve.
Well, also that's a
and the, each, we do have some other ideas as well.
each of the customers that subscribe to your data probably have a different use. For instance, if I was a realtor, I would be paying attention to people that were over encumbered. Because of short sales, if I'm an investor, yeah, I wouldn't do that. So
right.
Part of the list would be of interest to somebody, and another part of it would be an interest to another group.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And you know, we have government customers and others. So, you know, we've got a nice mix there in terms of customers. So I think, you know, as it declines further, we'll see changes in the mix of our customer base for sure.
Compare the margin of spread, if you will, when you entered the business in 2002 to, say, 2005 when you left into 2012. Could you describe what the margin was and what it is now?
When I first started with my partner, he gave me a little spreadsheet of minimum profit required, before we'd invest in a deal. And for a $150,000 investment, I think the expectation of profit was $50,000 to $60,000.
And that's not in a year. That's in a simple buy-sell.
That's on
process.
That one deal.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so you could do that three or four times a year. I mean, the margins were pretty incredible. That started changing, though, even right then. You know, just from 2002 to 2003, my first year. You know, I think that went from 60 to 20 in that first year. So margins were falling back then. You know, now I think a realistic expectation of return is maybe
5%.
5%. So $7,500 on that $150,000 is, for somebody new entering the business is probably where I'd set their expectation. If you're really good at what you do, you might do a little bit better than that. And then, you know, as long as you're efficient in how you do the business, you should be able to flip that money four times over the year. So I'd say a 20% minimum annualized return is a reasonable expectation going into the auction buying business. And if you're good at what you do, you should be able to do a little better.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that when you were started in 2002, there was a ramp up to the process that in the sense that you knew in advance which foreclosure had equity, and you probably had it in your hands for over 100 days. Yeah, you know, the market now gives you 4 hours notice for the same decision.
Right.
So
because that opening bid, you know, the dropped opening bid, you get it at the last minute, and then you have to make a pretty quick decision on which ones. And there's some, the volume is so high. You know, back when I was doing it, we researched every single deal. And that's hard to do these days.
Well, you know, when you're actually going to buy them, and that's kind of why I brought it up. When you're buying them, with your best case scenario being you're going to net 5%, you're going to hopefully do that four times, and you have a nanosecond to make all the decisions, and you're not meeting the people inside, and you're not seeing inside, and you're comping it on the fly, and getting title basically the same way, the odds of an error start increasing, even for the best people.
No, I think that's absolutely the case. You know, on the other hand, back when I was buying, there was a lot more second mortgages coming to market. There's
yes.
a lot more of those mistakes being made, whereas, you know, seconds don't foreclose as often. A lot of the people that started in, you know, kind of the late 2008, 2009 timeframe got a pretty soft entry into the business because a lot of the foreclosures were homes that were just recently built. It was the purchase money first going to sale, and there wasn't a lot of hair on the deals. And I think now, with the larger firms coming in and buying up easier deals based on yield and almost at full market value, the guys that are flipping are having to work harder and take those deals that have some hair on them and learn how to deal with those things, which you didn't have to a couple of years ago.
The big money coming into the marketplace, it's not just the trustee sales, it's the MLS, the bulk buys and so forth. How do you see that playing out, say, over the next 5-year period? What effect do you think they'll have, and do you think their exiting the marketplace will have a negative effect?
Some of them don't plan to exit. Through the sale of the property in any case. They plan to exit through taking these portfolios of rental homes public in a REIT.
Right.
In which case, you know, they'll maintain that portfolio of rental homes even though there may be some churn. So
sort of
a lot
like
of these homes won't come back on the market.
Okay. Like a scattered apartment building.
That's one thing to keep in mind.
Okay.
I think the other thing to keep in mind is right now, most of these guys are looking for a 7% or better yield return on investment.
Yeah.
And, so long as that remains the floor, I think the first thing we'll see is some of these markets that got undervalued, that overshot the line when coming down, are going to return very quickly to values where, you know, it makes sense. When I say a 7% yield, if you take all rent minus expenses, it should give you a 7% return on the total investment in the property.
Right.
And, I think the big question will be whether yields get driven even lower. You know, we just recently saw this last week the new quantitative easing from the Federal Reserve pushing which should push interest rates down and yield expectations down. And if, you know, yields get pushed down further, that, of course, pushes prices up further. On the other hand, if the Fed starts to lose some credibility on that front, interest rates start to rise, we may see the demand for yields go up, which will push prices down.
It'll,
but I think the game now has a lot more to do with that yield and yield spread than it does to do with comps.
I think it's going to be very interesting to see if this ends up kicking off a building boom that should have never happened. Because like you're saying, all these properties are going to a sideline that would have not occurred any other way. If it was bought by a trustee sale buyer, normally it's resold. If it's bought, or if it's not bought and goes to REO, it's resold through that method. Now it's going to the sidelines to be forever a rental, or at least for years to be a rental. And in the MLS now in Riverside, you have about a month's supply. So at some point, especially happens, if prices return to some normal number, some builder's going to be looking at the combination of fees and costs and going, holy cow, we can build something.
You know, one of the biggest surprises from the 2010 census for me is, you know, I really had the sense, and I think there was a lot of anecdotal evidence, that we overbuilt in California. And while that was true in a couple of smaller Northern California counties, versus population growth, it really didn't seem to be true in the larger Southern California counties like Riverside, San Bernardino, at all. You know, it seemed like the building that was done there was supported by population growth. So, yeah, I think we will need more building here at some point, I think, regardless of these equity players. And it's just really a matter of, you know, getting the price back to a point where it will support that building.
Well, we start fixing building, you fix unemployment, you fix migration. So that's a, I don't know if they figured out this is a plan in advance, but it's an interesting thing. Is if prices go up, you also have the overhang of the debt be less cumbersome, or, you know, and start solving itself. So it's interesting. I did want to ask just a question on REOs. Year over year, REOs down very significantly, but I just noticed last month it went up significantly. Any trend setting on that in that front where the numbers are going to be going up?
Yeah, it did seem like you know, we had a nice little bounce in a number of new REOs last month. You know, year over year, we're still down almost 47%, though.
Right, that's huge.
So, you know, despite a 30% bump last month, it's still 47% less than a year ago.
Yeah, I just wondered if you had any feedback on why that bump. We just interviewed some of the people that are the REO agents, and when they talk to their suppliers, if you will, they really haven't been given any sense that this is a trend, that, in fact, it's quite the opposite.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a new trend of REOs going up at all.
Okay.
You know, I have a feeling it probably just had to do with some pipeline timing issues. We did see a little bounce in notices of default in March. Maybe some of those are bouncing through right now. But I wouldn't jump to too big a conclusion off the one-month jump, even though it's a substantial, you know, 30% jump.
Yeah. Shadow inventory, we talked about that for the last few years. You very early on said you don't think it's going to show up in large quantities, and that turned out to be very accurate.
Yeah, you know, I think that one is you just got to come back to these two key things that changed back in September 2008, which is mark-to-model accounting and changes in the regulatory framework where these institutions aren't being pushed to get these things off their books. And with those two changes, you know, it's way better business for the banks to leave people in their home, even not paying, than it is to quickly foreclose. And ever since then, we've seen a rise in time to foreclose, a rise in the amount of time that these properties sit delinquent, and a slowdown in foreclosure rates. So, you know, but that seemed very easily predictable from that, and we've been able to stick to our guns on the no foreclosure wave and the rest since then. And lots of people, you know, continue just to look at the delinquency numbers and the rest and predict that there will be a foreclosure wave. We've heard it again right now with people saying that there's going to be a big wave of foreclosures after the election or after the first of the year.
Yeah.
And I think there's no chance of either.
I agree with you. Sean, we're out of time.
Yeah.
Doggone it.
Oh.
This has been Sean O'Toole with Foreclosure Radar. Go to his website, foreclosureradar.com, and probably spend the easiest $50 you'll ever spend for most bang for the buck. Sean, again, thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, Caldwell Banker Pioneer Real Estate, Elite Auctions, FIBI for Home Investors by Investors, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts Incorporated, Keller Williams of Corona, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, Mike Cantu, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Board of Realtors, Stars Photography, UDirect IRA, Wilson Investment Properties, Tony Alvarez, Weston South Coast Plaza, See isurvivedrealestate.com for more on the event and all of the I Survived Real Estate sponsors.